Hello and welcome to Monocle 24, The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
Mayoral elections are always a bit of a mix of national politics, local politics, and the personalities of the candidates for mayor, I think.
Just how much power does a mayor have? With a key mayoral election in London this week and another one in New York later this year, we look at the role of local government and how it can actively change the lives of citizens for the better. And do stick around to the end as I compete in the inaugural Urbanist Mayoral Quiz. Yes, that's happening. That's all right ahead in the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So, welcome to today's programme. Today is election day here in the UK, where thousands of council seats are up for grabs in what is the biggest set of local elections in the country since 1973. Voters will also elect, or in some cases re-elect, metro mayors and city mayors from London to Manchester, Bristol to Liverpool, and many more places in between. So, we wanted to use this as an opportunity to unpack just what a mayor does. Let's get more on this now with Akash Porn, who's a senior fellow at the Institute for Government, a London-based think tank that works to improve the effectiveness of government. Akash, great to have you here on The Urbanist. Let's start with the basics. Just how important a figure is a city mayor in the UK these days?
There's quite a few different mayoral models actually in operation across the country. So the big elections that are taking place this week are the so-called metro mayors, the mayors of big metropolitan regions like Greater Manchester and Liverpool and the area around Birmingham, and then also the mayor of London. So these are mayors who have responsibility for some important public services. Typically, they have responsibility for public transport, for investment in infrastructure and so on. They have responsibility for planning and deciding where new houses and other things should be built. They have a role often in further education, in skills provision and so on. And in some cases, this applies to the London mayor and the mayor of Manchester as well. They're also responsible for police and fire services. So there are some quite important issues that do fall within the control or responsibility of the mayor. And they also do just have a big public profile. They've got a personal mandate, and that gives them quite a lot of authority to speak on behalf of their city or region, to negotiate with central government for more funds or other support, and to coordinate as well, to bring local stakeholders, other local leaders and business and so on together to, for example, achieve certain infrastructure plans and so on.
And tell me, as they go to the polls, as voters go to the polls, how much do you think the past 18 months is going to be weighing on people's minds? Because during this period in the UK, we've seen many mayors actually be very strong advocates for their cities, be often determined to hold up a bit of a defence against what they think is coming from central government. You think of a city like Manchester. How important has the past 18 months been in shaping the role of these mayors?
Yeah, I think the pandemic has given the mayors, and some of them in particular have stood out, like the mayor of Manchester, as you say, and some of the other cities as well. It's really given them the opportunity to show their voters that their role is to speak up for the city, to defend the interests of the city, to negotiate with and to challenge decisions taken by central government that affect people. So, I mean, I think it's been good in that respect for kind of showing the value of having these individuals in place. However, I mean, most of the actual power over lockdown rules, support for business, and these other big issues that have arisen over the past 18 months are held at the centre. And so the mayors have been able to make a noise, to go on into the media and make their case for particular decisions to be taken. But they haven't really had the power themselves to shape the response to the pandemic in a very significant way. So I think this period has also shown the limitations of the form of devolution that we have within England at the moment.
How often do the politics of a city chime with who gets elected as mayor? Or are the people who manage to rise up to being the mayor often odds in a way with the normal politics of business in that city? You think of London with Boris Johnson at the helm, a Conservative running a city that most people think of as mostly leaning towards Labour. And in this election, Sadiq Khan, the incumbent, seems to have over 40% of the popularity polls already going into the election and is likely to be the mayor again. How does that work, do you think, on the ground politics and then who gets elected as mayor?
Mayoral elections are always a bit of a mix of national politics, local politics, and the personalities of the candidates for mayor, I think. So, you know, inevitably, if you've got a very popular or very unpopular government, that's going to affect the candidates from their party all across the country. But then where you do have big figures like Sadiq Khan in London or Andy Burnham in Greater Manchester, or previously, as you say, Boris Johnson when he was mayor of London, of course, people are voting to some extent on those individuals, on their record if they're standing for election, or obviously on their proposals for what they're going to do. So I think compared to ordinary local elections, council elections, the individual candidates for mayor do have a greater bearing on the result, because this is a vote for an individual leader who's going to have that strong personal mandate. So people aren't just voting in terms of party.
You said that their powers are limited. Is this because there is a tension with central government, that central government doesn't want to allow these people to be too powerful? They want to kind of push down some of the responsibility to them for difficult decisions. But in the end, they don't want London being too independent of national politics, for example.
Yes, I think central government is always a little bit ambiguous about devolution and the powers that it actually wants to be exercised at the local or regional level. And we've seen enthusiasm for devolution definitely kind of wax and wane over the past few years. So, I mean, if we're talking about within England, the English devolution agenda was quite a big priority for the Conservative government 6 or so years ago. So when we're still talking about David Cameron and George Osborne in charge, and obviously a lot has changed since then. But at that time, there was a real big push from those senior figures in government to create new devolved institutions, to create mayors for cities and towns across England, and to devolve important powers. I think the politics have shifted, and Boris Johnson is not seen as a natural decentraliser, and the agenda now seems more to be about centrally led regional policy. So maybe we're going to see more public spending in, say, northern regions that have been left behind in recent decades, but it's going to be much more led from the centre rather than genuinely locally led. So I think, yeah, there is always that tension, but having put in place these mayoral authorities, there is also a potential for them to kind of generate their own momentum, because having created devolved bodies, it's quite hard for the centre to directly take powers away from them, because people actually do like decisions to be taken closer to them. So I think we will see some interesting sort of tensions between centralising forces and localising forces over the coming years.
But do you think the reinvention in recent years of the mayor, of the role of mayor in many of these metropolitan authorities, do you see it as a success?
I think in many of the areas that the mayors have responsibility, it's actually still quite early to judge their effectiveness, because the main reason that mayors were put in place in many of these places was to do with economic productivity. I mean, the idea was that, you know, you look at cities like Greater Manchester and Liverpool and Birmingham and Leeds now and Sheffield, which are big, historically important cities, but have not performed particularly well economically in recent decades. And the idea was, we do need to have powerful local figures with the accountability that comes with being directly elected and the ability to develop an economic strategy for their areas, to set out plans for building housing and improving transport and so on, as I say. And a lot of those kind of things just naturally take a long time to pay off. So, you know, I think maybe in 4 years, when the next set of elections for these posts comes around, we should have a better ability to assess their performance. But already I do think you can see things that are happening that just wouldn't have happened if you hadn't had those mayors in post. So, I don't know, just for example, some of the improvements to public transport that are being made in, say, Manchester and Birmingham, the plans for redevelopment of abandoned industrial land in Tees Valley. That's been a big priority of the mayor of Tees Valley up there. There's various initiatives like that that I think you can say probably wouldn't have happened, or just would have happened more slowly, if you hadn't had the mayors in place to really drive them.
Thank you, Akash. That was Akash Porn, a senior fellow at the Institute for Government. After this, a few thoughts on the role of the mayor. Over the past 18 months, the value of having a good mayor became more evident than ever. As cities around the world were forced into lockdowns of various harshness, they needed a champion to articulate their concerns, persuade and cajole central government to do all it could to help, and use every tool available to keep both people safe and the economy alive. But there's something else that people have wanted from their mayors during this time: some vision. Now, the vision thing can be hard to supply when you're focused on keeping people alive, but it's crucial. Cities have been so battered by the pandemic that the threats to their futures have seemed almost existential at some moments. And that's why citizens want to be able to hear someone explain how the place that they call home can not just survive, but thrive going forwards. Giuseppe Sala has done that in Milan, using the pandemic as a moment to deliver fresh ideas about mobility, for example. The mayor of Athens, Kostas Bakoyannis, has remained steadfast in his belief that his city should be a place of opportunity, investment, and new technology. In the UK, the mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, may have riled central government with his questioning of how his city was treated and recompensed during the lockdowns, but he always managed to come across as someone passionate about his city, proud of what it stood for, and with a steely belief that nothing should damage its future. It's been a testing time, but mayors have proved to be nimble and essential. However, there's also a bigger picture to consider. Today, it's not enough just to be a fighter for your city. City leaders, through numerous networks and alliances, such as the C40 Mayors grouping that represents the world's megacities, are now allies fighting a common cause: how to make more sustainable cities, and with that, greater equity, better life chances, and improved health outcomes. These networks consistently set the pace for meeting rigorous climate change targets, moving faster than their national governments. When then-President Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, for example, US cities lined up to say that they would continue to hold up its tenets. In London, the push for cleaner air has seen restrictions brought in on vehicle emissions that are not enforced anywhere else in the country. And in our increasingly urbanised world, the role of mayors on hot topic issues from climate change to social inclusion will only soar, because cities can be high-speed laboratories of change. So, here's to the world's better mayors. Thank you. Keep pressing ahead, please. We need our cities back and fighting fit. Well, we turn now to New York City. Having maxed out his term limit, incumbent mayor Bill de Blasio is on his way out. That means from January the 1st, 2022, New York's recovery from the pandemic will be guided by a new face. But who will that be? Here's Monocle's New York correspondent, Henry Reese Sheridan.
The mayoral race for New York is taking place in a strange atmosphere. There's a febrile optimism in the air as the city looks forward to a full reopening scheduled for May 19th. And the race itself has shaped up in an odd way. Here's a look at the leading candidates. First up, Scott Stringer. Stringer is the city's comptroller, basically its accountant. He has by far the most political experience of the leading candidates, having started on a community planning board as a teenager and steadily worked his way up the democratic career ladder from there. But he's consistently failed to meet expectations in this race. And then last month, this happened.
Now to new information on a growing scandal surrounding mayoral candidate and New York City comptroller Scott Stringer. Today, a woman came forward and said while she worked for Stringer's campaign, he repeatedly groped her and made inappropriate comments.
With Stringer hemorrhaging support in light of these allegations, the spotlight is shining more brightly than ever on the two candidates who have been consistently beating him in the polls. In second place is Eric Adams.
So I became a police officer to bridge the gap between us, to make us all safer, and to take on systemic racism from within.
Adams grew up in Brooklyn and Queens before joining the NYPD and campaigning from within to change its racist culture. In 2006, he was elected to the New York State Senate, and in 2013, he was elected Brooklyn Borough President, a role in which he currently serves. It's a background that seems to be tailor-made to appeal to New York City voters right now. It combines an authentic New York City upbringing with plenty of political experience and specific expertise in police reform, one of the hot-button issues of the moment. But somehow, Adams has been consistently trailing in the polls to this guy.
We need to realize Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream of a guaranteed minimum income and get cash into the hands of people who need it most.
Hang in there, help's on the way.
We'll bring New York City into the 21st century by getting everyone...
You might remember Andrew Yang from the 2020 Democratic presidential primary. Yang made a name for himself in that race by proposing a universal basic income for all Americans. Now he successfully parlayed that name recognition to become the frontrunner in the New York mayoral race. It's a remarkable achievement because there's not a lot in his background to suggest he would appeal to New York voters. Unlike Stringer and Adams, he's not from New York City, and he's never held political office. Before conjuring a career in politics out of nothing, he enjoyed a career as a journeyman entrepreneur. It's difficult to know what precisely attracts voters to Yang and if he will be able to hold on to his lead. His strong showing in the polls points to a city willing to bet on a new face as it faces unprecedented challenges emerging from the pandemic.
That was Monocle's New York correspondent, Henry Rhys Sheridan. You're with The Urbanist. Stay with us, because after this, we're going to bring you our inaugural mayoral quiz.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of The Urbanist, welcome to the inaugural Monocle Urbanist Quiz. Please put your hands together for ex-public servant, Monocle writer and urbanism enthusiast, your quiz's host, Nick Moniz! Thank you. No, you're too kind. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the inaugural Urbanist Mayoral Quiz. And as that lovely voice mentioned earlier, it's where we pit two of the finest urbanism minds against each other to find out who knows more about running a city hall. But before we dive into it, let's first meet our contestants. To my right, I have a fine, strapping young man. What's your name? What city you're from? And your favourite piece of city infrastructure?
My name's Mr. Andrew Tuck, and I'm the presenter of The Urbanist, as you may know. My city is London. Favourite piece of city infrastructure? I would say anywhere you can sit down. The bench, I think, is an often neglected thing, and they've been so taped up, but we like the bench.
And I think you've got the appropriate response from the crowd there. Nice and simple, a good piece of infrastructure. And then on my left, the beautiful, talented young woman. Can you please introduce yourself, tell us the city you're from, and perhaps your favourite piece of urban transit?
Oh, hello, Mr. Moniz. Thanks for having me on your show. My name is Carlotta Ribello. I come from the city of Funchal in Portugal, but my adopted city is London. I've been here for a while, and I guess my favourite piece of transport has to be a boat.
A boat? Okay. Yeah. I like this. What an elegant way to get
Hop
around
on the
a city.
Ferry and get on the canal.
Well, is this happening in Portugal? Is this something you do in London with the Clipper, perhaps?
Yes, with the Thames Clipper. Sometimes, not always, but it's always a treat.
It is. What a beautiful way to see the city. Now, before we get into the rules and rigmarole, I would like to talk about what we're competing for today. I did have a nice set of steak knives, but unfortunately, due to health and safety, I was told I couldn't bring them into the studio. Thank you. That is not canned laughter. I would just like to confirm, not canned laughter. But what I can tell you we're competing for is the Monocle Guide to Building Better Cities, which I have signed. I've not written in this, but I understand that both of you have. So, I mean, a little bit of a treat for you both just to have some of my writing in there now.
Okay.
But what we've got six questions, multiple choice and true or false, a little bit of a mixture, covering the entire globe. We've got questions on almost every continent about almost every significant city hall that we could find. We've got two buzzers. Do you guys want to perhaps test one each?
This is my noise.
Appropriate.
And this is mine.
Okay, so our listeners will hear them. The idea is, if you could please let me read through the question in its entirety, I will tell you whether it's true or false, multiple choice. Once we reach the end, whoever buzzes in first will get first crack at answering it, and then it will be over to the person that answers second. Could I please request that you don't just buzz for the sake of buzzing? Take
but
a moment.
Very straight.
Think. Oh, I want this to be nice and fair. I pride myself on accuracy, and I hope you two would as well. So. Thank you. And
we
I
love
think
accuracy.
The audience can agree. I mean, we're in the business of accuracy here at Monocle. So incredibly, incredibly important. So the first question is a multiple choice question. And I think it's appropriate that we kick off with this one here in London, given that we are going to the polls today to vote for our next mayor. Which of these aren't the responsibility of the mayor of London? A, transport policy. B, waste and recycling policy. Or C, policing and crime policy.
I'm going to go for B.
That is correct. Can you how did you work that one out? How did you?
Well, because I know that the police commissioner is a role that the mayor of London certainly has some influence over, and certainly the underground here, those things come under the aegis of the mayor as well, and congestion charging and things. So yes, so transport and policing is something the London mayor has to do with. But I think the other responsibility is probably national or very local councils rather than sitting with the mayor.
Yeah, policy is a broad word. I mean, certainly there's national goals around waste and recycling, but in terms of collection and what we do with our rubbish and waste, that is typically managed by the local boroughs.
A properly rubbish question there.
Look, Andrew, I don't appreciate any jibes early on and you pointing flaws in the questions that I've sunk some significant amount of time into. Can we actually just give Carlotta a point for that one as well, please? So we've levelled it up for Andrew's.
Thank you.
For Andrew's attitude. So the next one, we're heading to the United States, to Bradenton Beach, Florida. Now, in this small city, when there's a tied mayoral election, which of the following means are they settled by? It's only one of these. Is it A, highest card wins when drawn from a deck, B, paper, scissors, rock, or C, an arm wrestle? Carlotta Ribello.
I'm going to go for B.
Unfortunately, it's not paper, scissors, rock. Andrew, your chance to steal.
I'll go A.
A. Highest card wins. That is correct. No.
You got me with the terminology because I thought it was rock, paper, scissors. So I thought it must be accurate because you're saying it the other way around.
Carlotta, we're
in the business of accuracy.
We are in the business of accuracy, but we are a globally minded media company.
Don't and I have think to tell me.
Clearly, there are cultural differences between how that is set up, and I would have hoped that you'd pick up on that. That's how we do it in Australia, paper, scissors, rock. No, there was a mayoral election there, I believe, in 2015 that was tied, and it was settled rather than going and doing another vote. They instead had them both sit down in the council chambers and draw a card out of a deck of cards, and it was settled. So a rough way to win or lose. The next one, we're going to move to my home country of Australia. Now, the mayor of Sydney, is the mayor the head of the largest local government area and electorate in terms of population in Australia? Is that true or false?
False.
That's correct. Do you know the answer? I don't. How did you come to that? Was that just a guess?
That was a gutty guess, yes. But I wondered whether Melbourne is bigger.
No? Not even close. The biggest city, local government area, is the city of Brisbane with 1.2 million people. And that's double the size. Ooh. Yeah, double the size of its nearest competitor in the Gold Coast, which is about 600,000. Sydney only has 248,000 people in its local government area. And the reason... The reason I like that question, and you can see the mixed response from the crowd, is because I think there's a fine balance to be struck between big local government and small local government. Too small, and it makes it difficult to roll out comprehensive policy that picks up a wide population base. Too big, and things can get a little bit clunky. So that's just my opinion. I don't know if Brisbane's got it right. I don't know if Sydney's got it right, but I think there's some middle ground there that could be explored. Moving along,
look,
I can see...
you go for Australia. You go, we're with you. We're
okay,
with you.
I appreciate it. I thought you were drifting off.
Informative and fun.
No, okay. Well, fun's subjective on this one. We will move to Belize in South America now. Alcaldes, would that be a correct pronunciation? I know you're Portuguese speaking, so...
Yeah, I think it's fair enough.
I think we'll go for that. These are mayor-like officials that have judicial and administrative powers in regional villages in Belize. Which of the following powers don't they have? A, to mandate communal cleaning of the village. B, to decide who can and can't live in the village. Or C, demand that land from local farmers be handed over to the village.
I'm going to go for C.
Absolutely nailed it. I'm kind of fascinated by this role. The combining of, administrative and judicial powers is kind of, I don't know if it's a little bit sinister, like they can just kick people out of the village if they don't think they're a right fit. So
it sounds a bit like kind of like Tudor England, doesn't it, with the serfs and things.
It does. Yeah. Well, it's a carry-on from there.
But nothing against, you know, telling people to clean up and have a clean city.
But there's some good stuff too. They can also just settle disputes, which is kind of nice. It doesn't have to go to the court. You just go to this mayor-like person who can be like, be friends.
And maybe you and me, Carlotta, can decide whether we have the power to eject people from the studio as well.
I mean, I think I'm getting close to deciding that we do have the power.
I'm not sure if either of you want this book that I've signed, but I can take it home for myself. We'll move along now to the United States, or rather return to the United States. Has a sitting US mayor ever been elected president? True or false?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
That is correct. So, yeah, only three former mayors, in fact, have been elected to the country's top job. Pete Buttigieg was perhaps a chance to overturn that last year, but
well,
obviously
at least
didn't.
He's in the administration and doing a fine job. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're on to our last question, our last round. The score is 4-2 to Andrew Tuck, but we're going to double the points on this one. So there's a chance that Carlotta could tie this all up and force the tiebreaker. We're in Japan now. The mayor of the town of Ikeda, Japan, was forced to step down after setting up which of the following next to his office in City Hall? Did he set up A, a petting zoo with exotic animals, B, a home gym and sauna, or C, a racetrack for his remote control cars?
I'm going to say A, a petting zoo.
Oh, oof. So, Carlotta, this is your chance to throw it up. Petting zoo, home gym and sauna, or racetrack for remote control cars?
Let's go with B.
Oh. And there it is, all tied up, ladies and gentlemen. I think we should go to the tiebreaker. I am glad I wrote this question. this one's another little bit of a bizarre one. Oh my goodness, indeed. In the town of Hum, Croatia, the mayor is elected by a handful of residents who vote by raising a wooden spoon for their preferred candidate. Is this true or false?
True.
It's a tiny town with only 9 voting members, and they decide by raising a wooden paddle to decide their next mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Andrew Tuck. Thank you all at home for listening. This has been the inaugural Urbanist Mayoral Quiz. Give it up for yourselves, give it up for our contestants, and take care, keep your city clean.
Oh well, that was different. But before we let you go, please join us next week as we bring you a very special bumper edition of The Urbanist, celebrating our 500th episode. That's nearly a decade of broadcasting a show about our cities and the built environment. And we couldn't have done it without you. But for now, that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Ribello and David Stevens, and David also edited the show. And to play you out of this week's episode, well, here's Ella Fitzgerald with Vote for Mr. Rhythm. Thank you for listening, city lovers.
Now that's the platform we're running on. We promise to swing it from now on. Fellow citizens, all right, follow me and vote for Mr. Rhythm Jamboree. worry.